Hey guys, this is Eddie McClintock. I play Special Agent Pete Latimer on Warehouse 13. At least I did before they canceled us. Shh. And you guys are listening to Paul, Ian, and Matt on the McSauce podcast. Check it out. What's up?
Welcome to a very special episode of the McSauce Podcast. My name is Paul McGinty. With me, as always, is Matt Cassell.
Hello.
And we have a very special guest today, author and newly minted Pittsburgher, Dacia M. Arnold.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Welcome.
Dacia just moved to Pittsburgh. She is an author, as I said, and she will be joining us and the Three Rivers Comic-Con crew at the convention in 2 weeks, 1 week?
Well, it's 2 weeks from today, but we haven't said what the date is yet today, so why don't you just give them the actual date of Three Rivers Con?
What date is that? The 4th and the 5th
It's the 4th and the 5th of June.
4th and the 5th of June at the David L. Lawrence Convention Center, right downtown. Very convenient for everyone. I get if you're from Pittsburgh, you may have to go across a couple bridges, but I guarantee you it's going to be worth it. Come see McSauce. Come see Dacia. We're going to make it worth your while.
This is my very first Pittsburgh convention, which I'm very excited about.
What was the last convention that you did?
My last convention was Denver Comic-Con, but since Comic-Con is now trademarked, I believe they changed it to Denver Pop Culture Con, which I don't think that name stuck. So this was my very first convention, downtown Denver Convention Center, and we had rows and rows of just authors, artists, comic books, everything. And then the following year, I had signed up to have another table, but COVID happened. And they changed the entire convention center into a makeshift field hospital. And so where I had once signed dystopian apocalypse science fiction books, I was then working in this field hospital in a real, like, dystopian apocalypse. It was very, very surreal.
Yeah, that's very bizarre.
That's called life imitating art, Paul.
And you are an Army sergeant.
Former Army sergeant.
I didn't know if it was like a president, where when you're president, you're always president.
That's funny. I'm not a Marine. The Marines are always Marines. I sure as hell got out of the Army.
Yeah.
But I was a combat medic for 10 years. I worked in field hospitals, combat support hospitals. I even worked in Baghdad Emergency Room, which was very infamous. They made a HBO documentary about Baghdad ER.
How long were you in the Army?
I was in the Army for 10 years.
Cool.
A magical 10 years.
It's like a shit or get off the pot at that point. And
that's
a
career.
Is it?
10 years? I don't know.
Not in the Army. Career Army people are usually like 20, 25 years. That 10-year mark is the shit or get off the pot.
So you were just trying it out for 10 years, see if it was for you.
I decided to have kids, and being a mom in the Army is not something that you can do at the same time. You can't be a mom and be a soldier. You are a soldier all the time, and then they let you be a parent in your quote-unquote off time. You don't own anything in the military, and I think when I had a child...
They own you in the military.
Exactly. They own your time, your house. At any point in time, anyone can come into your house to do a quote-unquote inspection.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Your finances aren't your own. They are all...
I didn't know that either.
Yes. So I helped people manage their entire life.
Is that all the branches or just the Army?
I can't speak to all the other branches, but that was my experience as a non-commissioned officer.
So you had mentioned before we started recording that you kind of bounced around every 3 years growing up as an Army brat. Is that what got you into the Army?
My dad has always been my hero. So he was gone a lot, and I spent a lot of my childhood just kind of celebrating my dad. My mom was always, you know, was in love with my dad. So we were in love with our dad. He was the greatest thing. We had to wait for dinner until dad came home, things like that. And so when my parents split up, my mom wasn't the champion. Dad was the champion. Like it was just how we grew up. And I never had that connection with my dad, and my dad never really tried for a connection with me. So I'm like, oh, if I join the Army, me and my dad are going to have this common ground. We're going to have a great relationship because, you know, we have something to talk about. Yeah. And I think at the end of the day, that really did accomplish that purpose. But then when my dad retired, he published an apocalyptic novel. He self-published a dystopian novel. And I read it and I'm like, oh, hell. If my dad can do it, I can do it too. So I went out and I did it. And I didn't just do it. Like, I fucking did it. And I, because of the amount of success that I had with my debut novel.
And what's that book called?
It's called Apparent Power. It's a book one. Of the Diazem series.
Book one of how many?
Right now, 4. I'm hoping to finish book 5, and I know I have a lot of readers who have been waiting years for this final.
You've got a regular George R.R. Martin.
Exactly.
Here.
I have a plan. I have a plan, and it's going to take some time to execute. So book 5 will come out.
George R.R. Martin looks like he could die at any minute. Daisha looks pretty vital.
I have time. Is that what? Yeah, is I think that what so. You meant to say?
Yes.
Yeah. So your first novel, you're like, fuck it, I'm just going to do a whole book series. I'm not just going to dip my toes in and write a couple short stories. I'm going to go for it.
So I went for it, hoping that it was a trilogy, because at the time I was writing like Divergent and Hunger Games were really big, but I read those books and I'm like, that's great. Where are the moms saving the world? And there weren't any. And I'm how fucking convenient is it to save the world when it's just you? And so I was like, the real challenge is saving yourself, the world, and your kids. And so that's what I wrote.
That's an interesting thing, because isn't a mom's like primary function to save her children first?
Right. Exactly.
So like that's the challenge.
It's the conflict.
Yeah, you got to save the world too, though.
And I wasn't saving shit when I was a teenager. You know, they gave me a bayonet at 19, and I'm like, I fucking kill somebody with this. But I wasn't saving anybody. You know, now I can make a baby carrier out of a sweatshirt and a hair tie. Call me fucking MacGyver. Like, I could save the world.
I'd like to think I could rig that up.
Maybe. Oh, yeah? But not survive a zombie apocalypse.
So obviously you're referencing a previous Mixos episode where we talked about how we wouldn't fare well in the zombie apocalypse, right?
That sounds like us.
Yeah, I don't think we would, Daisha. What makes you think that we could handle ourselves in a zombie apocalypse, given the 20 minutes that we've known each other?
So I once made a T-shirt that was like zombie apocalypse VIP, perfectly customizable. So then on the back of the T-shirt, you list your marketable skills of what you could accomplish or be of service to people after the fall of society. And all kinds of professions are still required in moving forward with life.
Podcaster required?
Well, is that really all you do?
I can draw zombies.
I can. I once.
That'll stop them.
I changed the chain on a chainsaw once. There's nothing.
There's no debating. You would be fine in the zombie apocalypse. Paul and I, we're dead.
You have to be resourceful. There's got to be like a fight or flight. Are you just gonna freeze?
Boy, I'm a great runner.
Yeah, see? That's a marketable
skill. I
hate
skill. Doing it, but I can definitely...
That's like mail skill. Carrier in zombie apocalypse.
I'd like to think I'd be able to figure things out, like, you know, seeing how a chainsaw worked and be like, okay, I can,
I'd have the desire to make it.
Oh,
I
good.
Just don't have
That's
the...
really all you need. I think there's a lot of power in intention.
Oh yeah. I'm not just going to give up. I'm going to try my hardest, but I will shoot myself before I walk into a horde of zombies though. I don't want eaten to death.
Do zombies try?
To what?
To be zombies?
To do anything. Are they trying?
Yeah,
or do they
try
just
to eat?
They try to get in a lot.
Yeah. They
like,
try to.
There,
that's a trend.
They try to kill
an
you.
Actual
motivation.
Yeah, like, I mean.
Aren't they hungry?
Do they just do?
I'm always hungry.
Well, it's not.
Like, you don't try to be hungry. You just are.
It's a base instinct. It's not a motive.
But isn't survival a basic instinct?
Yeah, but zombies aren't trying to survive.
Yeah.
They just want to, like, bite you.
Trying, though, in general, isn't a basic function. It's a willful function, correct? Like, you have to actually...
Yeah, I think
willfully.
We would willfully try to not die.
Good job, guys. That's all I ask. Sound like you guys had just given up before you started.
No, we're not just walking into the ocean here. if they're going to kill me, like, they're really going to have to work for it.
So you're a huge... dystopian, not even dystopian, but apocalyptic future kind of fan. Is that right?
I am.
So we're talking about zombies, Walking Dead fan.
Huge. Like
now,
day one.
Okay. Day one comic book, day one TV show.
Day one TV show. I didn't grow up with comic books and I'm
Well, we're
I'm,
done here.
I know, right? But I'm a mom and I'm raising my kids right.
Oh, boo hoo.
No, my son's 9 years old and he's doing his second book report of his life
on
Stan Lee. On Stan Lee. He is dressing up as Stan Lee, and I could more proud
Nothing
of my son.
Nothing more entertaining than a child dressing up
with
as
hair
a 65-year-old man.
Mustache.
Yeah.
Oh, the sunglasses, too. That was probably
That's
the best
part. That's a huge
part
of it.
So is he reading comics now, then?
He is.
So
he,
can we get him on the show? Is he here?
Oh, I wish. He would love to be here. He has read, which is very odd because, again, I'm the one that watches TV. So we dove into Marvel, the multiverse. And when they had Ant-Man versus Zombies, this kid has read this book, like, I want to say no less than 10 times. This probably is his favorite book.
I haven't read any of the Marvel zombie stuff, but, like, I don't know why. I love superheroes.
I read the first
zombies,
one, the like, Robert Kirkman Marvel Zombies. Yeah. I don't remember anything about it. It was like over 20 years ago.
It was a long time ago now.
Yeah.
It's always sort of surprising how old things are when, like, cause I'll see things and I'll be like, oh yeah, that came out like 5 years ago.
Right.
And I'm like, holy shit, 2005.
Before The Walking Dead, which started in 2002 as a comic book.
Okay. Yeah.
The Walking Dead was created in 2002. Now, have you since gone back and read the comic book?
No.
You're an author, right?
Are you going to kick me out? Yes, I am an author, and I'm read. I read books. I read comics. Doesn't mean I'm not a fan,
right? So, your favorite? Well, is The Walking Dead your favorite show? No, but it's up there.
It's up there. It's up there.
Okay.
Top two.
And you've been a fan since the beginning of it.
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel the show has, like, what's the trajectory of the show been for you?
So If we're only staying in The Walking Dead and not the other shows, I think that the character arcs that we're seeing today, and I say today because I'm still watching the show, but Daryl and Carol and, you know, those character arcs.
And Cheryl.
Cheryl. And even Judith, what she's an amazing actress. But seeing these character arcs, I really feel like the writers on the show, save a couple seasons, have really done a good job of bringing them all full circle.
I haven't missed an episode. I've watched it from the beginning all the way through, and it's had a couple lean years. But I feel like in the greater, you know, pop culture scheme of things, it's sort of fallen out of favor with a lot of fans. But I keep telling people, like, since they did the time jump after Rick quote unquote dies, it's been pretty fucking cool. The old man Negan-ness of, you know, the way Jeffrey Dean Morgan plays that character, ingratiated mm-hmm. into, like, their crew now, has been really interesting. Like, I think it's good again. My least favorite season is that season where they're at Herschel's farm the whole time. I think it was season two.
It was.
But I was still on board even then. It was about season four that I finally dipped.
You run 11 seasons, and you're going to get some. Mm-hmm. You're going to get some lean years in the middle there.
My struggle is I don't really like. I've come to realize kind of recently I don't really care for persistent storytelling, which is crazy. Because I grew up loving comic books.
Persistent storytelling?
Yes.
You not serialized storytelling?
Different. I think serialized and persistent are two different things.
Do you mean where it continues to be the same story because that's what hooked the fandom in the first place?
Yeah.
So as I'm in this point in my career as a novelist and a writer where I'm like slowly transitioning to film and TV. And adaptations. And the one thing that I did learn in creating film adaptations and moving from season to season is it is always going to be the same story because that's what people subscribe to. It's going to be the same story, but different. It's the same, but different. Just like zombie movies, zombie books, zombie comics, they're all the same, but they're different. And kind of like my latest book is a zombie book, but it's different. It's a different perspective. But then, I mean, how many is too many seasons? How many different ways can you spin the same people round and round?
I think once it starts to feel like there's nothing new and where we've been here before, that's when I start to feel like, okay, your story's over and you've said what you have to say and I'm not interested anymore because you told me.
Yeah, but you have a much shorter leash for persistent storytelling. Mm. Like, you're not a big TV show guy. Mm-hmm. Like, you like a nice, tight story and about like 2 hours on the big screen. And
I like good TV shows.
Yeah, but like...
And unfortunately, a lot of them just spin their wheels after a while. Like, the further into a show... There's very few shows that... like have better seasons in their later years than they did in their earlier years.
Why don't you get into some British TV? Because they don't give a shit. They're like, we did two seasons and that's it. You wanted more? Fuck you.
Isn't that Netflix?
Yeah, that is sort of Netflix. But American storytelling is always like, hey, Supernatural had 5 seasons and that's the story. But we're going to keep going for 15 more years. But and like, because it's still making money. Go, make more.
Well, what about the idea of Doctor Who, where it's a different doctor every season?
Yeah,
and people are still like screaming about it.
I really like Doctor Who. Like,
are you a big Doctor Who fan?
I've never seen a single episode of Doctor Who.
It's a unique flavor. you really need to dip my toe in the water, appreciate it for what it is because it's different. And it's weird, and they like sort of really appreciate their own low budgetness, especially in those like early Eccleston and Tennant seasons, and even way back in like the 60s and 70s stuff. It's a real unique flavor, but yeah, like that's something that's been going for years. But they switch out the actor all the time, they switch out the companions that are mm-hmm. with the doctor. You see recurring villains and bad guys, but it's. You get the right writers and creators and you find ways to make it fresh. But with all the character turnover all the time, Doctor Who's a little bit different than 22 seasons of Sam and Dean Winchester. Mm-hmm. No shade on Supernatural. Watched every episode. Love it.
Big Supernatural fan, Daisha?
Not a single episode.
Ugh. Just watch the first 5 seasons.
Okay.
Because that's what matters.
That's true. That is the story. As a matter of fact, the first you could dip after the first 2 seasons, really.
Mm.
You could.
There's a lot of tension.
But then you wouldn't get the end of
right
the
now.
Story.
There's a lot of tension.
Welcome, there's a lot of tension between
to
you
the
two.
Podcast.
It might actually be the first 4 seasons, and I'm including number 5 because the first episode of season 5, absolute heartbreaker. When I want to cry, I'll look up the montage from the intro to that first episode.
When you need to feel your feelings.
Yeah, played played in front of Bob Seger's Beautiful Loser.
Is
gorgeous.
What?
We'll watch it later.
Together with
Let's get back to Daisha.
Daisha, what is like a post-apocalyptic fiction different than dystopian kind of future fiction, or do you feel like they're kind of one and the same?
So there is like a Webster's Dictionary difference between the two. So dystopia is more of a societal degradation, and apocalypse is more of like a natural degradation of like the world as we know it, and then society then, you know, follows. So it is possible to have a dystopian like fiction in a post-apocalyptic world.
So Walking Dead is apocalyptic, Blade Runner is dystopian.
Mm-hmm. Does the dystopian future happen after the apocalypse?
It depends, like the chicken or the egg. It's like, okay, global warming caused all this crap, so was it because society failed? And whatever you want to debate about global warming. But for example,
I think we should talk abortion after this.
Let's. So it's did society cause the apocalypse? It is possible to have those two things at the same time, and it's possible to be completely separate. So,
but your books are primarily dystopian future.
Oh wow! So it depends. Ooh. It depends. So my main series is more of a metabolic science and genetics. So it could be considered apocalyptic versus dystopian.
What's the name of that series?
It is called the Diazem series. And the first book is Apparent Power, which is an electrical term. And also the main character is a mom. So a parent. And she has this genetic power to manipulate electricity.
Clever.
Thank you.
How did she get her powers?
So it's very convoluted, and it's not made apparent in the first few books.
Wow.
But so you don't really find out until the third book what caused it. But essentially a dormant gene in a quarter of the world's population just wakes up one day and allows like these people to absorb electricity from the things around them. So our bodies run on electricity. Our brains fire electrons, and so does our heart, works on electricity too. So what if this dormant gene, instead of pulling energy from food, we pull energy from the electricity around us? So a bunch of stored energy is what, gentlemen? It's fat, right?
Fat.
It's aged. It's all these things that we don't want. So when you store a bunch of energy, you need a way to release that energy. And so the gene that she carries is the check to that balance. And so it releases the stored energy in this quarter of the population. And so she has the ability to manipulate energy in both ways.
How did you come up with this concept? Because it's pretty unique. Like, particularly about the powers.
It's not just, hey, different superpowers.
Right,
it's
I
like
got bit by
specific.
An electric eel.
Yeah.
Because when I was writing this, there was a TV show that came out called Revolution.
Oh,
and do you remember?
I
loved this show.
I'm so glad you're here.
What? So in this show, they released this nanotechnology into the atmosphere that later on in the show, you find out has its own consciousness. So it's a sentient nanotechnology that removes the electricity abilities of all things. So it's not just like an electromagnetic pulse. It is like it disables any kind of electricity from happening anywhere in the world in order for the Earth to repair itself, another global warming kind of deal. And so the idea of having to survive with or without electricity was probably the big motivator around choosing that, as well as because I have a medical background, metabolic science and things like that and how the body works was very interesting to me. And finding two, and this is a Stephen King trick, but finding two things that would not normally intersect and putting them together in fiction, and you got, you know, this crazy idea.
Well, I wanted to kind of get into some of your influences, and maybe now's as good a time as ever because you already mentioned Stephen King, but as a writer, who are some of your writing influences?
Writing influence, I think Stephen King was my first horror introduction, and this was when I was a kid. I might have been 13 years old reading Bag of Bones, which I had no business reading.
Man, how young are you that Bag of Bones was your first Stephen King book?
How young am I?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah, my first one was It.
Was It? I am 37.
It seems like way too many pages for a first Stephen King book.
That was the one.
Are you tooting? Are you one-upping over here? Is that what's happening? We're measuring now.
No.
Stephen King books.
Yeah.
I'm kidding. I love Bag of Bones. But it's an older book. It's sort of in Stephen King's lull period where he released a bunch of stuff that didn't get like a lot of critical acclaim. Mm-hmm. Like Hearts in Atlantis was right around there. Mm-hmm.
And the Girl Who Loved Tom Gordon, that was my second one.
Oh, fucking God. Right? Girl Who Loved Tom Gordon is so good.
Oh, I vividly remember like having diarrhea in the whip. Sorry. I know this is an adult.
No, this is an
adult
what we're
podcast.
Here for.
I see Matt's face.
I only don't came say here for diarrhea. In the woods stories.
Oh, my goodness. I was like,
we
poor,
can talk about finding
baby.
Playboys in the woods next. Girl Who Loved Tom Gordon, the only time the Boston Red Sox were ever acceptable. But yeah, Bag of Bones. Like, why was that the one?
My mom finished reading it, and I snatched it up. So that was one.
Bag of Bones is a great love story. It's like a ghost story, but there's like a real romantic element to it that I really loved.
It's so fucked up. And then I spent like a week in juvenile detention. I read a lot there.
Wow.
I read a lot of Chicken Soup for the Soul.
Did it work?
You
haven't assaulted either of us yet, so I guess it worked.
Well, then after that, like I did a year of Bible college in the Poconos. I know, right? And then I joined the Army. I'm like all over the place.
So
very classic trajectory here.
Well, we can't let juvenile detention slide without asking why.
Oh, this is not even that fun. Me and my mom got in a fight, and she said, oh, yeah, well,
she said,
tomorrow.
Bag of Bones sucked.
My favorite book. She's like, tomorrow I'm going to take you to juvenile detention. And I'm like, fine, it's better than being here. And it's not like my best comeback, but she wasn't bluffing. She took me down and booked me in. And I spent a week
know you
in
can
there.
Do that, but like, yeah, it's, I mean, that's a better story than like I killed a man.
Maybe I can do that to my cat.
You want to take George to
juvenile.
JD?
Yeah. Maybe he'll come back different. Did you come back different?
I didn't come back.
Oh, well, shit.
They were like, oh,
George
you're
isn't coming back.
You can't handle you and your mom don't get along. You're not going back there. So I went and lived with my aunt, who is this huge, like, evangelical Christian youth pastor. And so I got indoctrinated into like crazy Christianity and ended up going to school for it. And it wasn't because.
And where is this? Poconos?
In the Poconos, in Wilkes-Barre. So, and we'll come back around to the story. So it wasn't because, I found God. And I, in a sense that I did, but it was just that I needed somebody to be proud of me. I needed my dad to be proud of me. I needed my aunt to be proud of me. And so a lot of times I would assign, my dad to other people in my life. So, my aunt, who is this youth pastor, I wanted my dad's love so bad, but I didn't want just his love. I wanted my dad to love me like I loved him, like I put him on this pedestal. And so with my aunt, it's like, I need you to appreciate me, but not just appreciate me.
Since your dad wasn't around at this
point. Because my dad wasn't around. So she was then my dad, quote unquote. So I was like, I need you to love me like that. Like I worship my, I need you to appreciate me and be on this podium that I placed my dad on. So then I went to this Bible college thinking, oh, they can't, they have to love me now because Bible studied. Yeah. And then, right? It was my first taste of Pennsylvania. It was the first place I moved because I moved every 3 years since I was
Bible
born.
Bible College, is that the name of the?
No, it was PBC. Called ABC.
The old PBC. We all know it.
No,
I did.
I want that T-shirt, by the way. Now I want like a really cheesy Poconos Bible College T-shirt.
As McSauce listeners know, I did. You know, my entire kindergarten through high school was Catholic school.
Catholic
so
school.
I'm familiar with religion, and my mom was a theology major. So
oh wow,
yeah.
Just needed that foundation.
I guess so.
That structure.
Is that why you went to Catholic school? Because you were desperate for your mother's.
Aww. No, she made me go there.
Yeah,
I didn't
you don't get much of a choice
but
at five.
The other option was getting beat up at Carrick High School every day, and I'm too soft for that.
Yeah, that's worse than the zombie apocalypse.
Can run. Like,
yeah,
can
send,
run.
Send me to Catholic school. That's fine. I'm only going to get lightly beat up there.
The most recent book that I read, The Climax, takes place in the Poconos, which I thought was kind of interesting. Because
XXX?
What?
Is that a XXX book?
Oh, my God.
No, it's called Survive the Night by Riley Sager.
Doesn't sound not porn yet.
No, it wasn't very porny, but it was pretty good. But it sounded like the Poconos was a bit of a rundown sort of formerly, like, it used to be kind of a glorious kind of vacation spot.
Like Montage Mountain and all
I
that.
I thought it still was.
It still
I
is.
I don't know. The way that it was presented in the book,
been there
it was
in
a
20
little
years.
Bit... It was a little bit rundown, although it took place in the 90s, so I don't know.
Hmm. Oh, it was maybe, a rundown when I was there.
Yeah, maybe Riley Sager needs to do a little more research next time.
I don't know. Like, all the road, I actually fell in love with Pennsylvania 20 years ago, and it's just because I didn't have a history growing up, so I'm moving around
and
stuff
like that.
You
get to pick your team, basically.
Oh, I get to pick my team, and this place has been here forever, and there's, like, these row houses that, because people have lived here so long, they're just, like, built on top of each other. And I, to this, like, still am obsessed over the architecture of Pennsylvania.
Pittsburgh's cool.
I love it.
I think it's an underrated town.
Is the architecture, like, in Philadelphia completely different than
Pittsburgh?
Oh, I don't
remember. Yeah. Probably not.
Yeah, it's a bit different. I mean, Philadelphia is older and bigger. Like, when you're in downtown Philadelphia, like, everything has, like, it feels like everything has a little bit of soot. On it. It just feels like
it has
like
a little bit of soot.
I don't mean to say that negatively, but it just feels I don't want to say it feels dirty, but it just feels older. Like there's like a soot, like there's just this fine
does
dirt
it
that's
does
there.
It smell like 90s comics in Philadelphia?
It doesn't smell quite as good.
I don't know.
As,
I feel
as
like,
90s comics.
I feel like Pittsburgh's like still 30 years behind the rest of the United States. So I can't imagine that Philadelphia is much older. But if you take like great, Scott, did I offend you,
no,
sir?
No, not at all.
We're 30 years behind?
30 years.
My,
but I did come
where do
from
I need to move to be, like,
woke-ass Denver is where you need to go.
I have to go to woke-ass Denver. Yeah.
Woke-ass Denver.
Do you feel like claustrophobic being like in the middle of the country, like so landlocked?
So in Denver.
Yeah, that's what
yes,
I mean.
Because a lot of people don't realize that Colorado is high desert. So it is the west part of the Dust Bowl. There's no grass unless it's irrigated. There's hardly any trees. All the trees are up in the mountain. And the mountain is an hour away from Denver. I don't think people realize. And it doesn't so much snow in Denver proper, as much as you would think. Like, it definitely snows a lot more here in Pennsylvania.
Aaron Steven, a friend of ours, moved out to Denver years ago, and I was surprised at how they'll get a shit ton of snow, and it'll still be 70 degrees.
Yes, and then it's gone the next day.
Yeah.
So here it snows, and I can't find my driveway for a week.
Yeah.
Which is nice. I
love
it. Yeah,
the way she was describing the weather when she moved out there, and I've been to Denver a couple times, and I've thought it was the coolest. But yeah, the weather out there just seemed so bonkers. I mean we have sort of similar stuff here where it's 50 degrees one day and then 90 the next day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
What's really very different is the also the landscape, because there aren't any trees. Like in my house in Denver, I could see a mountaintop that was 100 miles away. So from Denver, you can see on a clear day, yeah, Cheyenne Mountain in Colorado Springs, which is 100 miles away.
That's crazy.
You can't see anything 100 miles away in Pittsburgh.
You can't see anything 1 mile away.
I can barely see Matt right now. while we're talking about locations, huge thanks to New Dimension Comics and the Pittsburgh Mills Mall for letting us record on location. We are not in McSaw Studios.
Where are we?
We are in New Dimension Comics, Pittsburgh Mills Mall, the premier comic book location in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, Daisha's favorite city, Pittsburgh.
It's my favorite. This is the premier comic book store in Daisha's favorite city. Mm-hmm. Are we in the back room of New Dimension Comics?
We are surrounded by long and short boxes of comics. This place smells so good.
It smells.
Apologies to
glorious.
To Mills manager John Engel. I'm stealing a lot of books when we leave today.
No, we walked back here and I was struck by the smell immediately, and it reminded me of like comics from the 90s. Oh, and yeah, that smell is like.
And Daisha came back and was like, "What are all these?"
Oh man, triggers that just immediately like conjure up, you know, memories and things, and smells are like a big one. Music is another, mm-hmm, but like the smells back here just take me back to 1993, and I freaking love it.
Yeah, this is a cool location. Madison, who set us up, was like, "Oh my god, I hope this is okay. I hope, you know, this isn't that." I'm like, "No, this is.
Yeah, can I?
This is cool.
Live here."
Yeah, Matt already started moving it.
There's a cot in the corner.
No, I'm just gonna sleep in one of these boxes. All right, I don't want to stop talking about influences, Daisha, because off camera, off mic, this is an audio medium, we were talking about, you did a panel with the great Terry Brooks, fantasy author.
Oh, I was actually scheduled. Terry Brooks was on the lineup to be on this world building.
For those that don't know, who's panel. Terry Brooks?
Terry Brooks is a fantasy author. He's most famous for like the Shannara Chronicles.
You know, he says that it's pronounced Shannara.
I know. Nobody else.
Sorry to say, Terry, you're wrong.
Like, Daisha is not pronounced Daisha only in America, in Europe, which is the origin. It's Romanian. It's pronounced Dacha. So I've been saying my name wrong my entire life.
Gotcha.
It's BS. All right, Mr. Terry Brooks. So we were scheduled. He didn't come. And I don't know if you know.
Someone probably called it Shannara.
Shannara. I know.
Shannara.
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 And that's what, so when they did the TV show is what, which it started on one channel that ended up on MTV.
Mm-hmm. Chronicles of Shannara.
The Shannara Chronicles, yeah.
They translated the second book into the main story because they say the first book is too much of a ripoff of Lord of the Rings.
I don't remember any of this.
Oh, wow.
I know the name. I know the name Terry Brooks, and I know Shannara, but like this show.
The novelization to The Phantom Menace back in
the 90s. That's why I know the name Terry Brooks.
There you go.
I didn't know that.
I know things.
I know things, books, you know.
But okay, so he was going to be on this panel. You were on the panel.
I was on the panel. I was actually on the panel with Pierce Brown. Who is
Red Rising?
Red Rising, yeah. So he's younger than I thought he was. He's really
and
young.
Handsome.
I don't know. I don't see.
That's what they say. Yeah. I mean, there's a reason. There's a picture of him on the back.
I mean, his fiance was there, and I sit there and like drool over somebody who's significant.
Is
Pierce
Brown British?
No, he's not.
He's from Denver.
He is. Oh. Yeah, that's just where I was. So we were on this panel and Terry Brooks didn't show up. I think he either had a conflict or he was taking
a
nap.
I told you. Paul's looking it up for.
Yeah, he sort of has a Joey McIntyre of New Kids on the Block look to him.
Yeah. I've seen other panels or videos. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like his hair isn't quite as fluffy. Anyway,
wow,
so
lucky you, Daisha.
Really?
So you're on this panel. Pierce Brown is there. Pierce Brown wrote Red Rising, mm-hmm. which is pretty popular.
So we did, I think it's like his pirate boat floating. Anyway, so we're talking about world building, and that was what this panel was about. And, of course, cool. Terry Brooks would be, like, the king of world building.
He's written, like, 30 books or something in his Shannara world.
Mm-hmm. But I guess he didn't make it. He is a very older gentleman. And so at the time, and this was in 2019, he didn't make it, but then he came by to the table afterwards.
And oh, he was at the con, but he didn't do the panel.
He was at the con, but didn't do the panel. He did other panels. It was Denver Pop Culture Con.
Okay.
Is that the premier Denver con?
It is the big con in Denver. Yeah. Should go. It's great.
That's a long drive.
It is. It is don't a very do long it. Drive. It too is like the longest 2 days of my life.
So were you talking about your book series and your world building on the panel?
Yeah, we.
Is it on YouTube?
Oh, probably on it? YouTube. It is. I did another panel at the same convention where it was a game called Choose Your Apocalypse. And so my former publisher invited me to do this panel with them because, you know, we're still on good terms, which is really good for somebody. You take your ball and go home. So they invited me to do this, and we were in the DC universe, and we had to pick a character, and then our audience, we had to convince our audience to follow us into our own apocalypse. And so I can't remember the name of the character I had, but it's the fire chick from Batman. Oh, come on.
The fire chick from Batman.
So Batman, maybe she
Mr.
was
Freeze.
Just, no, come on.
Firefly.
Is that?
It's not a chick. Firefly is generally.
No, it is a very sexy lady in Batman universe. Catwoman. Oh, my God, and she works with fire, okay?
There's a Justice League character named Fire, but it's like green
she's
fire.
She's a villain. No, she's a villain. Anyway, so I was this character, and I hope one of your listeners, like, comes and validates me, like, to the ends of the earth. Oh, my God, good.
Yeah.
All right. Anyway.
So why were people following you or no?
So they were because... Well, I went in, I was going to sing Alicia Keys' This Girl Is On Fire, but then because it is recorded and put on YouTube, I wasn't allowed to own the rights to that song. So I had to sit there and write a song to sing to, like, get the audience pumped up. And, I don't know.
Can you give us a few bars
from
that?
It was like, we will rock you. But, you know, off the top of my head, like, I seriously made it up.
So you're freestyling.
Freestyling. We will rock you.
Did you rap it?
I do a little singing.
Yeah?
Yeah. I used to DJ karaoke outside of Nashville in my younger years.
Wow.
So, Nashville, I know this isn't the geographical Mixos podcast, but... I keep hearing great things about Nashville.
Smashville.
And everybody wants to go there, visit there, move there, whatever, but you picked Pittsburgh as your destination. How does Nashville compare to Pittsburgh?
So my husband and I, we were in the military, and we met in Clarksville, Tennessee, which is right outside of Fort Campbell, Kentucky. We're about 45 minutes from Nashville, and we don't party in your own town. You party in the big town. And so we would always go down to Nashville to party. And, like, really, I grew up, but in my adolescence, my early 20s was a blur. In Nashville, so I really couldn't tell you much about it.
I've never been to Nashville. I sort of want to go, but you know, I've played music pretty much my whole life, but I feel like I would go to Nashville and be like, oh, this is why I'm not a good musician, because Nashville is just littered with, like, top notch real artists, writers, songwriters.
Oh, it's
like,
incredible.
From what I've heard, everywhere you go down there, you have, like, top-tier talent. And I think I would get down there and be like, oh, I'm bad at this.
And that's often how I felt. Like if I were to go and sing at a bar in Nashville, it's really how I felt. Because you got people like Dolly Parton, like who just kind of set the foundation for music and songwriting, and period.
Real famous artists now, they like make their bones down there.
That's how I feel about going to conventions. You go to a convention, you have all these great artists surrounding you, and you're like, nope, I stink.
Yeah.
I'm retiring.
I mean, I get that experience on Twitter.
Yeah.
So I could follow a ton of artists. And I think, you know, we were talking the other night about how, like, someone will post, oh, this is my warm-up.
Yeah, right.
And it's the fucking Mona Lisa. And I'm like, fuck you. Your fucking warm-up.
That's funny. Speaking of Twitter, I was once, I'm... I do have a following on Twitter. You can find me on Twitter at Dacia M. Arnold. But I think my biggest fan...
How do you spell Dacia?
D-A-C-I-A-M. Okay. Arnold. Like
Arnold's
Palmer.
From Happy Days?
Or Arnold's from Happy Days. Or Arnold
Palmer.
Sorry,
that's my Arnold.
Since we're in Pittsburgh, you know? Come on, man.
It's like Arnold...
I'm not leaning into my heritage enough.
Clearly, your mom would be so disappointed.
She would. But she'd relate it to some Revolutionary War general or something.
Oh, that's Civil awesome. War dummy.
Because she's in
Gettysburg. She does both, buddy.
Mm-hmm. She's into the Revolutionary War, too.
Yep.
Oh, my goodness. Outlander. So you asked me what my favorite Outlander is, like, my favorite, like, series of all time. And then Walking Dead. But Outlander.
Oh, Outlander. Oh, Outlander was a book series.
It is
a
book
series. Mm-hmm. Historical fiction, mm-hmm. right?
So good.
Now, historical
You've
fiction.
You've read the books, Outlander.
I own the books.
Nice. Hardback.
You own them.
I own them.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Wow.
I've seen some of the series.
It's so good. We actually didn't start watching it until Men in Kilts came out with Graham McTavish and Sam. I can't pronounce his last name.
Hugan.
Yeah, Dugan and
Hugan. Sam Hugan.
Now, it seems like a lot of historical fiction seems to not be able to happen without a romantic subplot or plot in it.
Well, Outlander is speculative, so I have a really hard time with literary fiction. So, like, I'm going to get shot, but, like, Donna Tartt, I can't do it. I cannot read Donna Tartt. I cannot read.
I don't think you're going to get shot here.
Thank God.
Neither one of us know who Donna Tartt is.
Oh, that makes me feel even better.
But fuck her, though.
Yeah, fuck that bitch.
I'm going to make my brother-in-law listen to this episode.
Is he a fan?
So he's the one who gave me the Donna Tartt book. And I'm like, dude, I'm a busy lady. So I tried reading it and I'm like, I can't fucking read this.
So Donna Tartt writes historical fiction.
She writes literary fiction. So it's character driven versus like plot driven. So plot driven, something happens to a person and that's what drives the story. This is just writing about somebody's life.
Oh.
And I fucking live life. Why would I want to read it? But Outlander, on the other hand, while yes, it exists within a historical context, is also speculative with the aspect of time travel involved. So time travel, of course, is fiction for now. So that's really what makes it interesting is living in two different multiverses.
Mm-hmm. I like the idea of Outlander. And the stuff I saw, I'm like, oh, it's cool. I could probably get into this. I like, estranged loves. Like, I really like The Time Traveler's Wife, the movie. I'm probably going to start.
The show.
I'm probably going to start watching the show.
Sucked in
this week.
Immediately.
Yeah.
It's got Jon Snow's wife in it. So Kit Harington's wife,
and
Rose.
Theo James.
And Theo, four.
Eric
Divergent.
Bana was so good in that movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what was it, Rachel McAdams?
I didn't actually watch the movie or read the book, so it's probably why I really enjoy the series.
Yeah. Mm. Matt, do you have any other questions?
Oh, I have plenty. I have plenty.
So I have a question for you guys. So who's the most famous person that knows you?
Probably Billy Zane.
I think Eddie McClintock.
Well, knows us like. How does he?
Yeah, because
we've spoken to him.
But since he and I have had like Twitter conversations.
Oh, cool! That's important.
Oh, really?
Like, I've had conversations. Paul Tremblay wrote Head Full of Ghosts and Cabin at the End of the World. Stephen King reads his books. So he's my friend on Twitter and on Facebook.
So you are related to Stephen King, 7 degrees of Stephen King.
Yeah, I would say. I have friends that are friends with Stephen King's son.
Joe Hill?
Joe Hill just had twins.
I saw.
And I know that because...
Stephen King told you.
My friend Brian
you were
King,
at the Brits.
You know, he called me up. He sent me a picture. Nah, I don't know Joe Hill.
I really need to read Nosferatu.
I just saw that last night.
You saw the show?
The movie.
The movie Nosferatu?
Yeah.
There's a movie?
Are you fucking kidding me?
Nope. Dead serious. I know so there's the AMC series, but I didn't know there was a movie.
Dumb Dumb. It's like the original horror movie.
Oh. No, I meant Joe Hill's book, Nosferatu.
Oh, no.
That was turned into a series.
No, there's, I don't think they made a movie of that.
I didn't think so. That's why I was surprised.
Okay, sorry.
Do you guys remember A Christmas Story when we were kids? Of course you do. Christmas Story.
Matt's favorite Christmas movie.
Ralphie. Yeah. Yeah. Scott Farkas follows me on Twitter. About
his
lost
name?
My fart. Zach Ward.
Zach Ward.
Lost my mind.
Didn't you meet him at some point?
No.
No. Follows me
on
Twitter.
That's pretty crazy.
I lost my mind.
I met Stan Lee, but he doesn't know me.
He doesn't know anyone anymore.
Or he knows everyone. He's one with the
Stan
multiverse.
Lee's watching over me.
So I think the most famous person that knows me is Billy Zane.
You too.
Yeah, I know. Right? Small world. Right. He actually asked for my autograph.
Peek behind the curtain. You revealed to us before we did the podcast that you know Billy Zane. And he has your phone number.
Isn't that nuts?
Explain.
My
what
husband
the heck's
was
going
there,
on.
Just so everyone knows. He hates that I
Billy
tell
Zane
it like that.
Is the Phantom, as we all know.
Oh my goodness.
He's the Phantom
of things.
He beat out Bruce Campbell for the role of the Phantom.
He's the enemy of true love. Like,
yeah, Billy Zane's Titanic to me.
Yeah, he's Titanic to a lot
now
of people.
Never heard of it. Oh. Anyway, so you have Billy Zane's phone number. He has your phone number.
So
you exchange Christmas. What's going on?
So no shit. There he was. So I was at a convention last year. Was my first since COVID. It was at Scares That Care. It's a charity event they do annually in Williamsburg, Virginia. My good friend Brian Keene, who wrote Ghoul. They adapted that to film, but he runs like all the author stuff for Scares That Care, and then Joe Ripple manages the entire charity. He an amazing man. So last year Billy Zane was the celebrity guest. Yeah. He was like the big name there. And of course,
does he
like
have horror connections?
He does.
Why don't I know the horror that Billy Zane has done? Because I know him from Phantoms and Titanic, and
he popped up
in other stuff. But
he was also in other things that I can't think of either.
He's in Demon Knight, guys. Really,
Demon Knight, yeah. Tales from the Crypt, Demon
yes.
Knight.
Yes,
the not Dennis Miller one. Dennis Miller did Bordello of Blood.
Mm-hmm. Mm. No, Billy Zane was.
Well,
you
right,
hold on, hold on, goddamn, there, motherfuckers. No,
no,
wait,
my favorite.
Time,
no,
that?
But well done. Cut that soundbite out. Let's use that.
It's my favorite Billy Zane line ever.
I'm going to put it on the list.
So Billy Zane caught wind of one of your book series.
So when I was in Bible school, they used to make fun of me because at that time Zoolander had come out. And so he was Zoolander's friend. He was himself, Billy Zane, in Zoolander, the first one. And they always made fun of me, and they're like, "Oh, Daisha wants a Billy Zane-a-roni," and I, you know, whatever.
Don't we all?
Oh my God! So Billy Zane said this thing, and I try to play it cool. I don't hump anyone's leg, and I don't go up and ask for autographs and stuff like that. So,
I do. I have. If you listen to back issues of our podcast, mm-hmm. you will hear that I have a penchant for awkward brushes with fame. So anyway.
Oh man.
That's
I don't get any story. Okay.
Famous people.
Well, it can't get any worse than this. So I'm at my table because I'm just selling books, like slumming it back of the bus, like the very last row of this convention.
That's where the cool kids go.
And there's this guy in this blue Hawaiian shirt. He's got like the straw hat on, glasses, and a mask because it's a masked event. Mm. And just making a ruck, causing a ruckus on the vendor floor. And it really just looks like somebody's grandpa was like, oh, what's going on in here? And I'm like, God, they really just let anyone in here. And so he gets to the table next to mine, and my husband slaps, like, backhands my arm, and he's like, it's Billy Zane. And I'm like, shut the fuck up. And so he comes over to my table, and of course I have my mask on, and he's like, oh, what you got here? And I'm like, oh, it's science fiction. It's Mom Saves the World Instead of Teenage Girl. And he's
and
like,
you're playing it cool. Like,
trying.
You know
but
now.
I have a mask on, so it helps.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, Mr. Billy Zane, oh my God. And so he goes, gets his phone out, and he goes to take a picture of the book. And he's like, oh, no, better yet. So he switches to video, and he's like, now tell me about your book. So I go down the line about all of the books.
That is a pro.
And he's
if
like,
I was somebody, I'd do it that way.
I think I peed a little. And then he says,
is that on the film?
You could sell that.
He's like, I'll get the first book. And so I'm like, okay, do you want me to sign it? Do you want me to sign it to you? And he's like, go ahead and sign it to me. And I'm like, oh, thanks, Billy Zane. I couldn't think of anything clever. Nothing. Enjoy. What? Can't think of anything.
What did you write?
Probably. I actually took a picture of it. I think it just says to Billy Zane.
Better yet, you have his phone number, right?
No. He has my phone number. Oh, so at the end of this, which is even more awkward, okay? So I'm not pretentious, but sometimes I assume too much. So he picks up the book, and he's like, all the content, he grabs all the pamphlets, all the bookmarks, everything, QR codes, and he's like, it's all the information here for, you know, rights and your agent, stuff like that. And I'm like, yeah, it's me. It's me because I own it all because I took my fucking ball from my publisher and went home because the cut they were going to give me for motion picture rights was ridiculously out of line with industry standards. So I got out of there.
Who was the publisher?
I'm not even going to say it because we're still on good terms.
The company.
The company is.
Okay.
Yeah. So hopefully we all learn and we grow. So I let him walk away, and then I realized my phone number's not on any of this stuff, my email address, because I'm a very private person. I have small children. You can, like, my address is a P.O. box on Mars, Pennsylvania, on Mars.
Not the planet.
Not the planet. Because I don't need people knowing where I live. Science fiction and horror just kind of, people get kind of weird. So then I have to take my business card into the celebrity room and wait in line to see Billy Zane and be like, oh, I forgot to give this to you. And then he says, I'm really excited to read it. And I'm like, no, I'm excited. And then I fucking walk away. Like, what the hell
that
else
was
am
it.
I going to say?
Was that, was that the last time you saw Billy Zane?
Yeah.
Did he read it?
I don't know. It's been less than 12 months. So if his people are working to call my people,
well,
I mean, I wouldn't put that out.
The good news for you is, I can't confirm this, but I'm pretty sure he's a regular listener to the show. He's probably listening and he'll reach out. So,
it's funny.
Yeah, that's such a wild, wild bit of happenstance.
It was a lot of fun. Yeah. It's I'm still pinch myself. Like, it's almost been a year, and I'm like, hey, hon.
That's still really cool.
Remember when Billy Zane asked me for my phone number? And he's like, stop fucking saying it like that.
Even, you know, Billy Zane just, you know, kicking back at his house and, like, reading that book. That's,
or, like,
that's
on the
cool.
plane, like Billy Zane, it's on the plane and there's, like, my book cover and my name and everyone's like, oh, what's he reading?
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Wow.
I believe we have a caller.
Is it Billy Zane?
Stop saying his name or we're going to get sued.
TM.
Well, I expected that to ring a lot more.
I did too. I mean, our call screener is on top of it.
Yeah. Adam's really getting the job done.
Daisha, you're into horror as well.
I love horror.
What's your favorite
horror
movie?
Ian's going to hate this episode.
He can stick it.
That's great. My favorite horror is usually, I got some good ones.
Wait. Do you like horror books or movies better?
Oh, probably movies. Just because I'm a busy lady.
Well, It's beyond that. I think it's a better genre for film.
But I will tell you, Josh Malerman, who wrote Bird Box.
Mallory.
I read in a day. I haven't read Goblin or his new one, Daphne. But Mallory, I read in a day.
That's a short book, though.
Is it?
Yeah.
Thanks.
I mean, it's no it.
It's nothing. It's
no Wait, it. What was the Stephen King one that you read that you love?
Bag of Bones.
Is that a short one, too?
No, it's average. That one's average size. Yeah. But then I was like 13, so my hands were smaller. I don't know. How does that
it's
work?
It's not the size of your hand.
But you know when you're a kid and everything just seems bigger, like you walk into your old house and you're like, huh, I thought this was bigger than it was.
Yeah, that's fair. All right, so you read Bird Box in a day.
I read Mallory in a day. I watched Bird Box. I suck that if I watch the movie, I can't go back and read the book.
That's why I refuse to watch the movie, because I want to read the book.
I see that.
I haven't read it yet. I have it on my shelf, though.
Usually my favorite horror is probably the most recent horror I enjoyed, and then horror that sticks with me to the next morning. So most recently, my husband and I watched M. Night Shyamalan's Old. And I will tell you that the premise was incredible. Mm. The acting was great. The script was fucking garbage. It was the worst. Like, you have a black gentleman, and his lines consisted of, "Oh, damn." Like, what the fuck is that?
I don't know.
Maybe that's just how that guy talked.
Damn.
I've heard, I haven't heard great things about Old, but everything I've seen from M. Night Shyamalan, I've liked, except The Village. I thought The Village really let me down.
I like The Village.
But I want to see Old. Yeah, I kind of hated The Village.
I have a spinoff of The Village that I've been cooking up novel. I will. It's more like suburban. You know how, the suburbs now, especially here around Pittsburgh, people get so mad about suburbs popping up in rural Western PA. But they're very inclusive and self-sustaining.
Yeah.
Like, there's their own ecosystem. Mm. So, but it's kind of like Village, but they shut themselves off because of some event that never happened. And then you got a couple inside that's got to break the code and figure out really what's going
on. What's that
going
to be called?
I don't know yet. The suburbs.
Do you come up with the title after you write the book? Or does the title usually happen early?
It happens early. It really happens along the way of planning the storyline. I've never had to change a title for print. So it happens during plotting. That was the seat. That wasn't gas, by the way.
Oh, okay. We heard it. I didn't know.
Don't worry.
Yeah.
Mike picked it up.
Billy Zane heard that.
I hope so. He probably enjoyed it. Don't tell
my
husband.
I already like that.
I really love ambiguous horror, so ambiguous cosmic horror, such as...
I know what you're going to say.
A Quiet Place.
Nope, that's not what I thought it was. I thought you were going to pick a Nicolas Cage movie.
I love that movie.
What's that movie called?
Color Out of Space.
Have you seen that one?
No, what?
You want cosmic horror?
Really? Watch it. It'll be.
Cool. Oh, I think I remember kind of a part.
It's going to be your
I
new
remember
favorite
the
movie.
Colors, if that makes sense, of that movie. But no, A Quiet Place I really enjoyed because you didn't know. You didn't know anything. So you didn't know when it started. You didn't know when it ended. There was so much ambiguity. So I went home from the movie theater that night, and I have stress dreams when I. About horror, any aliens scare the fuck out of me. E.T. gave me nightmares for years. To this day, E.T. and me don't get along. So I'm having nightmares about these creatures from A Quiet Place. And then for some fucking reasons, 2 in the morning, I'll tell you why I know that, my husband sneezes. The loudest motherfucking sneeze I had ever heard in my life.
Does
I thought I was going to die. So then the next day I'm looking at my Fitbit that tracks your heart rate, and it's 62, 63, 104, 2 o'clock in the morning. Thought I was going to die.
You know, it's so funny that you did that because I looked at my heart rate when I saw M. Night Shyamalan's The Visit, and it spiked toward what would have been the end of that movie.
Oh, wow.
Did you see The Visit?
Mm-mm.
It's the one, Paul, you've seen it.
I have seen it.
Where the two grandchildren go to visit their grandparents for... whatever it
a
is,
weekend.
A week or weekend, something like that. And it has such a like make the hair on the back of your neck stand up, mm-hmm. kind of twist at the end. So, but it's funny that you mentioned that because I did that once before. I was like, oh, wow, God. That's a thing. It really does track your heart
rate. It does. It sure does. And then another one that I really enjoyed that was horrible was Malignant.
I didn't see that one.
I haven't seen it yet either.
You need to see it and appreciate it for what it is. It is horribly wonderful. And especially like if you're into that like mid-80s horror, it is so good. And then like you'll get into it and you're like, okay, believable, believable. What the fuck? And then they don't ease you into the what the fuck, but then you're just like, oh, okay, we're going to keep going. And then it's one after the other.
I missed
it's
my
nuts.
Window. It premiered on HBO Max and I was like, oh, it's an HBO Max mm-hmm. movie.
Yeah,
I have all the time in the world to watch it. And then like a week later, they took it down.
Because it was I was like, what the fuck?
But yeah, Malignant, something I definitely want to watch.
What I don't enjoy is when you get ambiguous horror, like Bird Box was a good ambiguous horror. Like you didn't know what the creatures were or, you know, what they look like. But then in Mallory, it kind of lifts the veil. And in Quiet Place 2, it lifts the veil. And then it's not so scary anymore because you don't explain it. And it's not funny
were
if you have to explain
good,
it.
By the way, Mallory
I didn't
and
hate,
Quiet Place 2?
I loved Mallory and I loved how it tied everything up in a nice bow and it brought closure to many different things. Mm-hmm. A Quiet Place 2 kind of did the same thing, but and it gave you a bigger picture of what was being experienced at that time. Mm-hmm. But it also lifted the veil and removed that ambiguity. So it's no longer scary. So I'm not going to have nightmares about A Quiet Place anymore, you know?
So when you're putting the pieces together of what's going on in the story, that's what, you know, scares you. Because you get to like fill in the gaps with the stuff that scares you specifically.
So with dystopian or apocalyptic fiction, I tend to be obsessive. And so when I write, it is my kind of cathartic, therapeutic way of working through these trauma responses. So being in the military so long, when shit hit the fan, I know when shit hits the fan in the military, you know what you're going to do and where you're going to go and who you're going to report to and what your job is. When you separate from an organization like that with all these like crazy skills, you know, it kind of leaves you flapping in the wind. And then so writing dystopian fiction, apocalyptic fiction allowed me to place myself in a situation and then figure out how I would get out of it. But not only get myself out, but also get my kids out and my family. So that's why I like the genre so much is because like in A Quiet Place, could I survive? In Zombie, you know, in Walking Dead, could I survive? How would I survive?
So you put yourself in the situation. Do you do this like in real life? Do you find yourself like in a place like where we are right now mm-hmm. and start to determine an escape plan?
I get so obsessive about stuff like that. And it's kind of like being triggered. So when people are triggered, your biggest coping mechanism is to think about something else. So I will never have a concealed carry weapons permit ever. I won't do it because if I am carrying a weapon, I know that I am everyone's first line of defense. And so there's this level of hypervigilance that I know I cannot turn off if I'm in that mindset. And it's stressful and it's obsessive. And
that's
so it is interesting because you think, you know, I'd be super Republican and wear my gun on my hip, but I'm not. I other people can do it and that's fine.
Well, like your relationship to that kind of responsibility is like a neat, like take.
You can't enjoy life that way. And I had a friend who was a police officer and our kids were in kindergarten together. So where I worked in the hospital, I never got to my kids', you know, stuff. So when I could get to my kids' stuff, I'd have to sit in the front row so my kid could see that I was there. My friend, she sat in the back row where she could see all the exits and know who was there and who wasn't supposed to be there. And I know what she's doing because I think that way. But it sucks the life out of you, sucks the joy out of your life. And so, I don't know. If I live in this post-apocalyptic world, it's all pretend. And it's not,
right,
you
right.
know.
It's more enjoyable to do it,
it
in make-believe.
Yeah.
In the Matrix.
Thank you.
I haven't thought once about how I would get out of here in an emergency. I'd probably just bury myself in comics.
It really, so one day, so no shit, there I was. I was working in a hospital, and we're like on the 10th floor of this hospital, an inpatient unit, and we had a bomb threat to the hospital. And the bomb threat, we assumed, came from somebody that makes threats all the time. He's just a generally horrible person to be around. And so all the patients are flipping out because it's on the news, you know. And so they're coming out of their rooms. They're like, should we leave? And so it was all said and done. They neutralized the situation. It was fine. And then a lot of, because they knew my background, they're like, Daisha, what would you have done? And I'm like, I like you guys a whole lot, but I'm fucking going home tonight. Like, you can follow me if you want. I'm fucking going home. You know, whatever happens, I'm going to find the fuck how to get home. I mean, but then you can't sit there and think about, but what if you don't? You know, you can't think about that. It would consume me if I did. So what's the point in constantly fighting a hypothetical situation? This took a sad turn.
No, this is I don't think it's a sad turn at all. I think it's like
it's scarier
a very
than
realistic
the horror
term.
Talk, though. You had mentioned that you thought maybe the new Doctor Strange was going to be your favorite Marvel movie because it has horror elements injected into it. Have you had the chance to see it yet?
I have not seen it yet. Did you see it?
I saw it.
You did. Did you see it? You haven't seen it. Okay, so we're not going to talk about it. We're not going to talk about
it. I liked it. Can I tell you that?
Yes, you can. I like that it's taken this. I did watch the multiverse. So I have an idea of what's going to happen in the movie.
The animated?
Mm-hmm, the animated multiverse.
I haven't seen that yet. The what if?
Oh, what if?
So my kids are so small that every Wednesday night that there's a new Marvel series on, it's Marvel night. Yeah. It's Moon Knight. It's Loki. It's, you know, WandaVision. The kids loved WandaVision. I love WandaVision. Scarlet Witch is like my favorite superhero.
She's quite prominent in the new Doctor Strange. So
yes, I did see them. So I'm also excited about. But we have to find. We're pushing around finding a babysitter. Like my kids are pretty small. Should they go? Shouldn't they go? But they watched Moon Knight. They watched. Moon Knight was pretty spooky.
Yeah,
with Khonshu.
I thought Moon Knight had a. Had some
they
cool
were scared of
Khonshu
in the very beginning.
Khonshu, even Amit.
Mm-hmm.
Towards the end, Christian Slater. That's not who it is.
Ethan Hawke.
Ethan Hawke is sort of creepy in his own right. Just like with the long hair.
He's really come into his own, didn't he?
Yeah,
he's come a long way.
Yeah, I thought Ethan. He was great. But yeah, a lot of horror stuff.
He was in
Training Day.
No,
Sinister.
Sinister, which I only saw recently, and it was pretty damn
good. Was that the movie with Angelina Jolie?
No.
What was that one? Because that was a good one.
With Ethan Hawke and
Angelina Jolie? With Ethan Hawke and Angelina Jolie.
Was it a horror
She was like
movie?
A detective.
Tomb Raider?
Oh,
she was a detective.
Bag of Bones? Or Bones?
No.
Bone detective?
Collector? Maker?
Bone collector?
I think that, what, the other one?
That's with Morgan Freeman. He did like... Spider, the girl in
the girl with the dragon tattoo.
I don't know. There's
now we're just now we're just putting words together. Sinister, very good. I won't watch it.
Taking Lives.
Me. I've heard of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, Sinister. Oof. Creepy.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's that's all the visual elements in that movie. He's watching all those tapes and. Like
that's the best part. The home.
Seeing Bagul's like face different places throughout the movie, and then like I'm going to bed
the
at night.
The ending
and
itself
I'm like,
was
Bagul here.
Was kind of the weakest part. I thought, like when you finally see the children
where it all pulls
crimes,
together.
Spoiler alert. Sorry, the movie's been out for like fucking 12 years, so deal with it.
We're beyond that.
But like the creepiest part was seeing like the, what was that, like 8mm video of it.
Yeah.
And when it is happening in real life,
Well, having like moved so much in my life, like that kind of.
Oh, that triggers some
super
interesting
spooky
things.
Yeah.
You wonder about the history of.
of the home and stuff like that. Like right now, the house that I live in now, it looks like it was built in like the 1890s, but it was built in the 40s and then remodeled in the 80s to look like an 1890s. Hmm. Yeah, I know. I really like the old architecture of Pittsburgh.
What kind of writing room do you have in your beautiful home?
So my house kind of, so like I said, it was remodeled. It's got turrets, so not like a gun turret. It's kind of been the theme.
A castle turret,
like a tower. So
A writing turret. Do you write with a feather and a quill?
No, I have a clackety keyboard that looks like, it's a gaming keyboard that looks like lipstick. I get it.
So it's a clicky style keyboard.
Clickety, clackety.
Do you need
keyboard
that
and
feedback,
a laptop.
That clicky feedback?
I do. But because this turret is an extension of our bedroom, I can't write early in the morning because my husband is sleeping. And so I'm sure if like...
It's writing time.
Yeah, right.
Tick, 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 tick. Do you hear this sound? Speaking of Stephen King.
I think I would very much like your house, but then I see places like that and I immediately think I'm not going to want to clean all this.
Yeah. Is it scary at night?
My kids are terrified. So my son doesn't, his room isn't on the same floor as everyone else. But it's right below our bedroom. So I'll hear like dunk, dunk, dunk on the wall. My dog will go nuts, but I know that it's my son's too scared to get out of bed to let us know what's going on. They're pretty scared of the dark in general.
Yeah. Moving from or into a house that's supposed to be like prime spirit time because you're unsettling the world that they've that they're accustomed to. So whenever you hear a lot of ghost stories, it's usually around moving times.
Do you believe in ghosts?
I do. I really enjoy ghosts and real estate. And if you watch a lot of ghost shows, like the Connection. Ghost Hunters, they usually go to visit a house that they're in the middle of renovating and it pisses off the ghosts. So I want to write a show that's called My Haunted Real Estate. And it's where like a psychic medium comes in and interviews your ghosts. So that they can have input on how to renovate your house. They don't fuck up the whole thing.
They probably tell you to put it back the way it was.
No, right?
Do you know the author, Grady Hendrix?
I'm going to say this, and it's probably going to get back to him. I thought Grady Hendrix was black until this weekend at Stoker Con. So Stoker Con was this past weekend, and
Where's Stoker Con?
Stoker Con this year. Oh, you guys are going to love this because we're going. Okay, so this year it was in Denver.
We the three of us?
We the four, because we're going to rope Ian into this too.
Well,
good
so,
luck.
So I know, right?
You're clearly new to this.
So this year it was in Denver. Next year, right here in the Berg.
Get the fuck out.
I am so
con.
Fucking excited.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Like Matt and I were such horror guys. We have horror artwork.
Well, what's
like,
it called again?
Stoker Con.
Like after Bram Stoker?
Yes. So it's the Horror Writers Association annual conference. And Grady Hendrix did win a Stoker this year. And
for what?
A book.
What did Grady Hendrix do? I know you've mentioned this
most recently. Final Girls support group.
Right.
But he's got a new book coming out, which I feel like he wrote it just for you.
It is called "How to Sell a Haunted House." You motherfucker! I seriously thought Grady Hendrix was black, and I don't know why. But then I saw a picture of
is
him
gay?
With like one of my
I
friends.
Can't tell,
I don't know
the way.
I obviously didn't know him enough to know what he physically looks
Pierce
like.
Pierce Brown was British.
I thought you know what I thought he was too. Pierce, right? Pierce Brosnan, close enough.
The name makes you gay.
No. I don't. British.
It makes you British.
Okay. Yeah. And I mean,
but Grady Hendrix
makes you black.
Clearly gay.
I know, right? What the fuck?
I mean, we're
sorry.
People. anyway, that's why I asked if you knew who Grady Hendrix was. But he's written some cool horror books.
Oh,
actually,
yeah.
There's another really cool one that is out now, and it's a very fast read, even for small hands. It is called. Christ, what the fuck's the name of it? It takes place in this store called OSC or something, which is kind of like a fake IKEA.
Oh, okay.
And the book graphic design is so cool because the book itself almost looks like a like an IKEA catalog.
Nice.
But it's about like a group of people that stay like in a haunted IKEA. Like weird shit's mm-hmm. going on, so they decide to stay overnight in this IKEA, fake IKEA.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, I'll tell you what
all
it's
those
called
royalties
in a second.
Wrapped up in. Name brand.
They actually mention, like, IKEA exists in the context of the book.
Okay.
It's just, this is another kind of,
because
like,
you can't, because IKEA is trademarked, I imagine, you can't name the book IKEA.
Probably.
Not without giving most of the money to IKEA.
Right, right. It is called Horror Store, but it's like, written within... What's the double, an umlaut above the letters?
Oh, nice. Oh, store. It does look like an IKEA magazine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
You've shown me that before. Looks cool.
Yeah. Anyway, I wanted to ask you, because I know that we're going over well over an hour, but I wanted to ask you about your involvement with FullMag.
I actually brought a copy. I know, like, everyone can't see it.
Oh, there it is, Full Mag.
Yeah, I brought this copy because it got rained on yesterday, and I was like, I can't really sell that at a con.
Okay, so this is an anthology of military-related stories.
They are military historical stories. They are true accounts of war.
From an American perspective?
From an American perspective.
And so this is volume 3, and mm-hmm. you wrote one of the stories in here.
I did. The editor, August Ugg, he usually does the interviewing and pulls the stories out and writes the stories and hires the artists to come in and do the art along with these stories. And it is like... traditional comic book level
legit.
Art. It's beautiful.
Do you submit the story and then they just have an artist placed with you?
Well, back in 2019 at Denver Pop Culture Con, I walked past this guy's vendor table and I noticed he had veteran stories. And I'm like, I'm a veteran who writes stories. Do you want to collaborate? And the result is Baghdad ER in volume 3 of Full Magazine.
So you sort of found your own guy
on accident. Is more of a collaborative effort, and that's a lot of just networking within the industry. You know, you never know Billy Zane who you might meet, stuff like that.
Sure don't.
So that one, that's mine right there.
And how did you find that collaborative experience?
Like, how did I enjoy it?
Yeah.
Oh.
Did you enjoy it?
I did enjoy
this
it.
This is the most unique art in the whole book. It's very painterly, like mm-hmm. very expressionist.
Your story is?
Yes, it is. I really enjoyed it. And everyone that I served with that I'm still in contact with, I let them know. I was like, hey, you know, I have the opportunity to tell our story. And so it's really... because my head doctor, Dr. Todd Baker, wrote Baghdad ER the first 15 minutes. So they call it, when you go into an emergency room in the United States, they call it the golden hour. Okay, you have an hour to save a person's life, typically. In Baghdad, if we couldn't save them in 15 minutes, they weren't being saved.
Why?
Because they died. Usually, a battlefield wound is bleeding, and if there is bleeding, if they can't breathe, if we can't establish an airway, if we can't stop the bleeding, you have about 15 minutes to accomplish those tasks, and people don't make it.
Got it. Yeah.
So yeah, I know, right? Really morbid, but we had a 98% survival rate, which is pretty good, right? Of course, you have 98 sounds good, but we still lost 150 U.S. soldiers, kids, essentially, that didn't get to come home.
Yeah.
And that was within the ER itself. So if you imagine 2% was 150 soldiers, like, we saw a lot of shit.
Yeah,
we saw a lot of
blood.
Yeah, it's like the best worst time of your life, because we worked really hard and we saw a lot of shit, but we also took time to cope with it and figure out how to come out the other side without being too fucked up.
Too fucked up.
Too fucked up. Now here I am writing horror stories.
So, writing horror stories, you're writing post-apocalyptic stories and dystopian future stories. And what is this? What are you handing me?
So Dirty Bombs is the result of reading Max Brooks's World War Z in the middle of Iraq. And so I have nightmares about all the horror that I consume, and zombies were one of them. And so I would spend many nights dreaming about zombies overtaking the compound and how, of course, I would survive, which became my latest book that came out in April called Dirty Bombs. And it's about a mom, a soldier mom, who is stuck downrange, as we call it, during a zombie attack. So the bombs are tainted with a biological agent. So you're not just fighting Al-Qaeda, you're also fighting zombies.
Do we ever overcome the zombie apocalypse?
Well, if you can't beat them, you join them.
Or is it just you survive for so long and then you succumb? Like, is there ever an end to it?
But isn't that just life in general? And I really feel like there's kind of a parallel there.
I feel like there could be, but
what are you a zombie to? Oh, a job, you know, life, family, kids, like what?
Well, I mean, in the context of the story, like, you know, the zombies are the evil that would have to get defeated. Mm-hmm.
They
like,
figure it out in World War Z.
They do, actually.
And then the apocalypse ends.
Yeah.
It does. You just live alongside. Like, and that's you accept the new normal, kind of like we did with our own apocalypse and the COVID virus. You just learn to adapt to it with either vaccines or anti-vaccines, as they did in World War Z.
Are you going to have this book for sale at Three Rivers Con on June 4th and 5th of 2022? You're going to have it on sale, as well as the Deism series.
And Full Mag.
And will you have Full Mag copies?
I will have copies of Full Mag, and I also have a short story collection that I did early in my career.
You're going to have that too?
That is very embarrassing, and I will have many copies of that.
What would you compare the Deism series to? Like, is there anything kind of out there for listeners that might be kind of wondering, well, what is, you know, if I like this, well, I like that?
So there are some supernatural elements, but if you were a young adult teenager watching Hunger Games and Divergent, but then you fucking grew up and had kids and have a mortgage and a job, you're going to love this book.
It's relatable to people that have kind of grown up.
Yeah, we didn't grow out of the genre. We just grew up.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
So YA is no longer dystopian. YA is more fantasy now because our kids, that's what they're reading now.
Yeah.
But YA didn't grow out of dystopia. The readers just grew out of YA.
Yeah. That's interesting.
Or I just have a really, really bad symptom of PTSD that I use this as a coping mechanism.
It's cathartic. It probably is.
It really is.
I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
Why, thank you.
I think you're doing fine work.
Oh, thanks.
You're not out there killing anyone, so keep writing books.
Oh, yeah.
That's what it takes.
My kids are good human beings, and I think that's a good measure of my ability to move past so much ridiculous trauma.
Horror.
Kid horror.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have kids. I have no gauge as to what ages kids should be watching things, but like they're like watching.
I felt like I was watching.
A little intense.
It was, and they were scared. They covered their eyes quite a bit in the beginning, but once that ambiguity of who's Khonshu, who's Amit, what's Ethan Hawke doing was cleared up, they're like, okay, now we like Khonshu.
But I feel like we got. I'm gonna group you in two. You know, Matt and I, we grew up watching horror young.
Well, like,
and
do you
like
remember
a lot of 80s stuff?
People Under the Stairs. People
like
Under the Stairs was probably one of the earliest horror shows that I watched, and I might have been 6 years old.
Yeah,
you
there
know,
some, like we talk
I've
about
never
it all
seen
the time.
That.
Oh, it's creepy.
There's messed up stuff in Monster Squad. Monster Squad's
Wolfman's got nards.
Not necessarily the nards part, but you know what, Wolfman's.
They say the F word multiple times in Monster Squad.
Really?
And not that F word, the other F word.
Oh, they do, because that was the thing. I remember.
Like, that's what you called people.
That's what you called anyone. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember that. I made my kids recently watch Neverending Story. Loved it. And that one still rings true.
Does it really?
It really does. Neverending Story.
Creepy stuff in there, too.
It was weird.
I feel like that dog might be a child molester.
Palcor?
Yeah. Because he even says, like, I like little boys.
Isn't that strange?
Yeah, it was.
How did we survive?
What's the wolf's name at the end? Because he always sort of scared me. Morg. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the Sphinx's, you know.
Oh, with the boobs out. Yeah. That was awesome.
I think that's where awkward. A lot of my psychoses stem from. My love of nudity and murder.
That was great.
I'd like to see that. Not remade, per se, but, like, with new special effects.
Oh, yeah. It would be interesting to do. I also made them watch The Dark Crystal.
Which, the wet crystal?
The Dark Crystal? No? Yes. My husband had never seen it. He thought I was fucking crazy. I was like, this is, like, one of the best movies. And I also, one of my favorite, and I don't know if this counts, it's more fantasy than horror, but I know Tim Curry from Legend with Tom Cruise. Mm.
Yeah.
Like, everyone's like, Rocky Horror Picture Show? No. I was Legend with Tom Cruise.
Clue for me.
Clue. That's a good one, too.
It for me.
Mm. Everybody has their
Tim Curry.
Tim Curry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That would be a great poll, by the way.
Oh, like, what do you know Tim Curry from? He did Tales of the Crypt. He has done a million things.
I haven't seen Legend in a very long time, but I didn't see The Dark Crystal start to finish until maybe a couple of years ago. And it was fine. Yeah. But much like Labyrinth, like it didn't have the nostalgic resonance with me. I thought Labyrinth was kind of stupid.
I love David Bowie so much that my infant daughter had a onesie of David Bowie smoking a cigarette. I kid you not.
Nice.
I love Labyrinth.
Same onesie.
Jennifer Connelly. Oh my God. I'm so glad that she came back
What do you call a robot that smokes a cigarette?
Oh, what?
A robot.
Why? I'll be here all day.
That's my own joke.
If I didn't have to do this by myself without you, you'd be fired.
I thought you were going to say I'd kill you, but I guess that's better.
Why does a duck have feathers? To cover his butt quack.
We're not going down this road.
I don't care.
Right. Daisha, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks, guys. I had a great time.
Where can people find you online? I mean, obviously they can find you in person 2 weeks from today. Today's date being the 21st of May. 2 weeks from now is going to be June 4th.
Yes, Saturday and Sunday, David L. Lawrence Convention Center, downtown Pittsburgh. Beautiful downtown Pittsburgh. God, I love being down there.
Is the weather going to be good? Oh, we can't. It's too far out to look at the forecast. Huh?
Yeah, probably.
So where can they find you?
Oh, they can find me Dacia M. Arnold. So D-A-C-I-A M. Arnold at everywhere. You can find my websites, that Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, all that jazz. Even Pinterest if you want to see the kooky things that I'm into.
And then lastly, where can the people find Billy Zane?
Not in my DMs, apparently. not for a while, I guess.
He's got to clear it with his people first.
He's actually will be in MacGruber 2. That's what he's been working on. He's the bad guy in MacGruber.
Which, I haven't seen the first MacGruber.
Who
You're
did?
A MacGruber fan, though, aren't you?
No.
MacGruber.
For some reason, I feel like you are.
I don't really like Will
Arnett.
No, no. I love Will Arnett.
Oh,
Will,
I do too.
Wheaton. The MacGruber guy. Not Will Friedle. Not Will Wheaton.
The guy I plays see his MacGruber. Face. Will,
no, not Will Smith.
Will, why am I blanking on the most famous one?
Maybe I screwed it up and his first name's not Will, but I'm pretty sure it's Will.
It's, Will.
He's not the most famous one.
The Saturday Night Live?
Yes.
News?
Yeah, because that's where MacGruber's from.
No, the... Old School. What's Will?
Oh, Will Ferrell.
Will Ferrell.
Not him either.
I couldn't think of his name.
Also not Will Lee Mays.
I don't think I know any other Wills. And this is terrible
Forte.
Radio.
Forte. Will Forte.
That's it.
I like him in interviews, but everything I see him in, I'm like, I don't get it. His comedy's just not really for me. But that is going to do it for us today. Daisha, thanks so much for joining
us
in lovely New Dimension Comics at the Pittsburgh Mills. My name is Paul McGinty.
I'm Max Out. Thanks, Daisha.
Thanks.
And we'll see you next time.